University of Maryland Global Campus was established to bring a respected state university education to working adults at home and abroad. 70 years ago, we sent professors overseas to educate service members and their families on military installations and on the front lines. Today, we're online because that's where working adults need us. That's where you need us. We'll support your commitment to being a successful student with services that fit your lifestyle. And we offer more than 90 programs and specializations for where you are and where you want to be. University of Maryland University College is now University of Maryland Global Campus. We go the distance because times have changed, but what we're made for hasn't. UMGC offers online support for veterans, including resources at the Veterans Resource Center, no-cost digital materials replacing most textbooks, virtual advising, transfer credits, and lifetime career services. Speak to our dedicated military and veterans advisors who can help you find the right degree for your career path. Visit umgc.edu. Certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Hi, I'm John Bearer, the host and lead researcher for Stories of Sacrifice, American POW MIA podcast, and the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating, a free forensic genealogy public service I provide to support POW MIA families trying to get their loved one identified and brought home. First, I want to thank you, our listeners, for your interest in the Stories of Sacrifice podcast. Our goal with the podcast is to tell the world about the sacrifice these brave heroes gave for the freedoms we enjoy every day. They gave our country their last full measure. They give us their tomorrow for our freedom today. Second, we would like to raise public awareness that thousands of these heroes from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the Cold War have still not yet been found or returned to the United States, with many still buried as unknowns in our own national cemeteries, their families still waiting for our government to disinter and identify them. So what can you do to support this important mission? First, if you are a relative of a missing in action service member, you can visit the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency website for more information about providing a family reference DNA sample. If you want more information, you can also contact me at john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Even if you're not related to an MIA, you can contact your members of Congress to request they allocate enough funding to support the POW MIA mission and to change the DPAA policy to a DNA lead process and create additional public partnerships to disinter and process the remains for those that are buried as unknown. You can also help us in our mission by sharing these podcast stories with your friends, family, and consider sharing them on your own social media. We would also appreciate if you could leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. You can also visit www.storiesofsacrifice.org and leave us a review there. You can visit our affiliate links on our website where we will earn a small commission on your purchases and no extra cost to you. If you feel moved to do so, please visit our donation links on our website to help us continue this important mission. Just sharing these stories helps us greatly, and we cannot thank you enough for listening. Sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy today's show.
Good evening. For decades, a family believed their son was buried at the Santa Fe National Cemetery.
But his remains recently turned up somewhere else. It had the Army exhuming a grave today to find out who really has been buried there. News 13's Rachel Knapp reports.
A major shift in World War II happened after the Japanese defeated American and Filipino troops on the Philippine Islands in 1942. Those troops were sent on the infamous Bataan Death March to the Japanese POW camp. One of the 2,800 prisoners who died in the camp was Private First Class Juan Gutierrez.
PFC Gutierrez passed away on November 19, 1942. There were 13 other people that passed away on that date. They were all buried in one grave.
After the war ended, the military believed they found Gutierrez's remains and sent them back to his family, who buried him here at the Santa Fe National Cemetery in 1950. Years later, when DNA analysis became a useful tool to identify soldiers' remains, the Department of Defense came across more of Gutierrez's remains in a mass grave in the Philippines. So, who was buried in his grave in Santa Fe?
It was during that time frame that the Department of Defense realized that there was commingling amongst those remains.
In order to find out, the Army had to petition the courts to exhume the grave since they couldn't find any of Gutierrez's immediate family. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs eventually agreed to do the disinterment, which crews began working on today.
We have to separate out the remains that are in that casket that aren't Gutierrez's, and then so it's kind of like putting a puzzle back together.
The military hopes to finally put Gutierrez's and the other soldiers' remains to rest and will give them full military honors when they are reburied.
You have to do the moral thing.
Rachel Knapp, KRQB News 13.
The military tells us they eventually found Gutierrez's family in California, and they gave permission to exhume the grave. We're told about 37,000 soldiers' remains are still unaccounted for from World War II.
Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II, American POW MIA's podcast. The voice of the missing in action and the voice of those buried as unknowns in our national cemeteries. I'm your host and lead researcher, John Bearer. Over 75,000 service members are still listed as missing in action from World War II. Of those, over 30,000 are currently listed as active pursuit by the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. Active pursuit meaning they could possibly be identified with the proper family reference sample DNA being on file with the Armed Forces DNA Identification Laboratory at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. The process of donating DNA reference material is easy, painless, and free of charge. If you are the relative of a missing service member, you can contact the Service Casualty Office of the MIA for information on how to provide a DNA sample. The Service Casualty Office will mail to your home a DNA donor kit that contains a donor consent form, instruction form, 3 cheek swabs, and a shipping envelope. All you have to do is fill out the paperwork, rub the inside of your cheek with the swabs, place the swabs back into the containers, and affix the label. The collected samples are then placed in a pre-addressed and prepaid envelope and then mailed to the Armed Forces DNA Identification Lab at Dover. That's it. It's a completely painless process. To get more information about your missing in action relative, you can visit our website, uspowmiafamilylocating.com. And we can help you to determine if your relative is currently listed on the DPAA active pursuit list and the next steps to help get them identified. Just visit our website or email john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Welcome to today's Story of Sacrifice podcast. Today we want to bring you a story that's very near and dear to our hearts because it's a case that we personally worked on. The wrong remains buried by the wrong family. Another misidentification, the case of Private First Class Juan F. Gutierrez. Mistakes are a fact of life. What counts is the response to the errors. Ever wonder why the U.S. government does not want to identify the missing from World War II? Listen on. The U.S. government expends great effort in telling the public how hard they work to recover the remains of American service members from all the wars. Yet they expand even greater effort in avoiding actually recovering and identifying those remains. The Defense POWMIA Accounting Agency's Public Affairs Office seems to produce more than the identification laboratory. Like many things the government does, it makes no sense until one knows all the circumstances. Last week we told you the story about Private Arthur H. Bud Kelder and his family struggled to bring his remains home for burial. Many of the listeners found it unbelievable that the U.S. government would obstruct the return of the remains of American service members. The story is that Bud was one of 14 Americans imprisoned in Cabatatuan POW camp in the Philippine Islands who died on November 19, 1942. All 14 were buried in a communal grave, number 717, in the camp cemetery. After the war, American forces opened the cemetery and moved the remains to a temporary cemetery known as Manila No. 2. One man was quickly identified on the basis of a dog tag found with his remains. Three more were identified from dental records subsequently received from the states. The remaining 10 were ultimately buried as unknowns in the Manila American Cemetery. Their families were told only that their son's remains were non-recoverable, with no explanation of what that meant. The implication was that no remains existed, as the Army had never even hinted that they may be part of a group burial. To the families of these unknowns, it was like they had fallen off the face of the earth, and the Army wasn't sharing with what they knew. In 2010, a member of Bud's family sought records of his death from the Army, who happily obliged and provided the file. It was immediately obvious from the records that Bud was one of 10 unknowns buried in Manila, but which one? The Army had been quite cooperative in providing the personnel file, but dug in their heels when the burial records that would identify an individual were requested. A nerve had obviously been hit, and the government was finished cooperating. It took a trip to federal court to obtain the record under Freedom of Information Act. The records were obviously releasable, but the government lawyers presented numerous extraneous objections in order to delay public release of the records known as X-Files. Fortunately, Bud's older brother, Dr. Herman Kelder, a dentist, left behind an oral history tape that mentioned that Bud had extensive gold dental work. It took 3 years and a federal lawsuit to obtain the records of the 10 unknowns from grave 717, but only one of them, X816, was shown to have any gold dental work. This should have been a slam dunk identification based on substantially better evidence than any of the World War II era identifications. But the family's requests for the remains were either rebuffed or totally ignored by any and all government agencies involved. And a sadly morbid side note, while the gold dental work was detailed on the first dental chart made when the remains were recovered from Cabatatuan Cemetery, all the precious metals subsequently disappeared from the remains. So much for protection of the remains by the Army. At least the dental record remained for the identification of the remains. It was later shown that not only had no other unknowns from Manila been identified in modern times, but perhaps more tellingly, documents surfaced showing that the government agencies had not only knew the identities of the remains, but they were also aware of the government's incompetence and misconduct. The government knew they had a problem. Actually, they had many problems, and they were of their own making. They definitely did not want to open this Pandora's box. It took another trip to federal court before the unknowns from Grave 717 were disinterred for identification. Right from the beginning, almost if by design, they had made a mess of the recovery of remains from Cabatatuan POW camp. The prisoners had secretly kept extensive records of deaths and burials. However, unlike other POW camp burial records, such as Camp O'Donnell and Cabatatuan burial records, did not record each man's position in the communal grave. Not to be bothered by little details, the graves registration personnel assumed that, like other camps, the burials were in roster sequence, so they officially identified the remains on the basis of their sequence in the burial roster. After several hundred remains had been transferred from Cabatatuan to Manila Cemetery No. 2, and buried under the incorrect name determined from the burial roster sequence, the mistake was realized and all the disinterment reports were corrected. All the records were corrected except the cemetery burial record. So as to dental records were obtained and compared with the skeletal remains, more identifications were made. Unfortunately, as the remains were identified, the cemetery was told to ship the remains previously misidentified on basis of the burial roster sequence. So while some mother's son had been identified, some other mother's son's remains were shipped to her for burial in the States. But this wasn't the worst of it. For some, as yet unexplained reason, the Graves Registration Command in the Philippines refused to employ any trained personnel to properly reassociate the remains, preferring instead to the use of contract civilian embalmers. While there is no indication that the remains were commingled in the communal graves, the untrained embalmers diligently sorted the remains based on color and size and hopelessly commingled the remains. In the case of Bud Kelder, for example, a few token bones returned to his family have come from five different caskets. It is not improbable that a bit of each of the 14 men were present in each of the 14 caskets. While each of these problems might be attributed to honest mistakes, it is the response to the error that counts. If the mistakes were sad, the government response was totally shameful. Not only were multiple government agencies aware of the mistakes that many, perhaps most families had received the remains of some other family son, but they worked to continue to cover up and to this day diligently fight any request to return the remains. In a final display of incompetence in Grave 717 case, the Defense POWMIA Accounting Agency was unable to locate a family member to consent to the exhumation of Private First Class Gutierrez and finally asked a federal judge to allow them to proceed. A private individual, which was myself, using only publicly available data, was able to locate a close family member in less than 1 hour of research. Now, more than 3 years after the last occupant of Grave 717 was exhumed for identification, a few token remains from each man has been identified and returned to their respective families for burial. The Kelder family, after four trips to federal court, is believed to have received the largest amount of remains, about 10 large bones. The balance of the remains, which were virtually complete when exhumed from Cabatatuan, will likely be cremated and disposed of regardless of each family's religious beliefs. So how does a crack government agency screw up so often with such consequences without learning anything? It looks like the Defense POWMIA Accounting Agency has a long heritage of incompetence. Cabatatuan Grave 717 was the first of a handful of similar cases disinterred for identification. But it was not in the least atypical, either in the facts or the government's effort to conceal their incompetence. Rather than leverage what they had learned from Grave 717, the DPAA continues to find new ways to avoid identifying the more than 1,000 unknowns from the Cabatatuan POW camp. Thank you for listening to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II, American POW/MIAs in the Philippines. This has been a production of the U.S. POW/MIA Family Locating. You can find us on the web at uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and given in the best intention. Overall, the POWMIA accounting community is doing what it can with limited resources. It is our hope additional federal funding will be provided, along with additional partnerships established to disinter and process the remains of our unknowns located in the national cemeteries. You can help by contacting your congressional representatives and asking that they implement a DNA lead policy for those unknown POW/MIAs. Thank you for listening.
Are you in excruciating pain brought on by your son, daughter, or spouse suffering from addiction? You are not alone. If you call Recovery Centers of America today at 1-888-RECOVERY, your whole family can begin to recover. At Recovery Centers of America at Capital Region and Bracebridge Hall, your loved one will be treated with care by expert addiction professionals, while family programming will give you support and healing so that you can recover as well. RCA accepts insurance, provides transportation, and offers intervention services. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now.
Mail's here. It's 2 minutes later than yesterday. And because you know it's 6 minutes earlier than the day before, you decided it was time to get back to work. Let's job it up. At CareerBuilder, we're ready to help at every stage of your search. Build a resume, get industry tips and advice, and apply to multiple jobs in just one click. Get started now at CareerBuilder.com.